increase of drug use and trafficking. It continues. South Africa finds itself as a main corridor, an epicenter of transnational crime, especially when it sees the transport and the transit of illicit drugs coming through this country, moving between continents. That's why we thought we got Dr. Simon Howell. He's a research fellow at UCT's Global Risk Governance program. He joins us now on the line. Simon, thanks very much for coming on air with us. Over the last few months, there's been more literature, more books, more reports coming out saying that how local gangs here in Cape Town on a street level have direct connections to broader crime syndicates, and in those syndicates having huge links to transnational crime. Is it quite interesting that this particular conference is being held in Cape Town at the moment?
Yeah, well, in terms of drug dealing and the flow of illicit drugs, South Africa is ideally placed in terms of sort of geography for drugs to pass through or be destined to the country. The conference is, of course, quite a large one and quite important, and is essentially an aim to bring together law enforcement bodies and others from across the world so as to discuss these and other topics.
You say South Africa is a key player in transnational crime. If you can put that in context for us, just what impact, what role does South Africa, its political geography and its physical geography, how does that contribute? We see ourselves as quite isolated here on the southernmost point of Africa, far away from those global, we see ourselves as quite far away from those global international crime syndicates.
Well, I mean, in terms of consumption, South Africa is still one of the strongest economies on the African continent, and as such is a destination in its own right for certain drugs and a producer of drugs in its own right, mescaline, for instance, being one of those. In terms of, you know, transit and flows, it's critically important because we have very good, well, we are serviced very well in terms of air corridors and shipping corridors and indeed, you know, road corridors. So if you want to deal drugs at that level, at the international sort of transnational level, you need access to good airports and good infrastructure, but you also want law enforcement to be on the back foot. And I think in South Africa, we have that combination a lot of the time.
And when people talk about the influx of drugs, illicit goods into the country, we can't just be talking about porous borders. We also have to be talking about the complicity of government agencies. So, for example, when the conversation out there is about foreign nationals selling drugs and counterfeit goods, we also have to ask ourselves as South Africans, who is allowing these things in? How strong are our borders when it comes to our inspectorates, when it comes to our SARS officials, customs officials? We can't just be blaming external forces, also be looking at ourselves.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, our borders can be quite porous in certain areas. I mean, you know, the other question to ask is, well, South Africa, why is there a demand for goods, whether illicit or legal, and drugs in South Africa? I mean, you know, who is creating the demand? And there's a reason for drugs and illicit goods coming to South Africa, and that's because the demand exists. So, you know, I mean, ultimately, we need to self-reflect on why this is occurring in the first place and who is consuming the goods that are brought here. In terms of, like, borders, you know, I mean, they can be quite porous. That being said, you know, South Africa's borders are quite extensive, and it's quite hard to police them extensively because they're just so long.
When we are talking about decriminalization, and that I read out a message from Henry saying that the one way to sort of nip the issues of gangs, particularly street gangs, looking at broader crime networks, is to legalize the issue of, or decriminalize to a certain extent, the issue of drug use and the sale of drugs. It's a program that's been implemented in some countries like Portugal, the decriminalization of the use in Portugal. We're looking at places like Canada, some states in the United States, particularly with the decriminalization of marijuana use. Is this a profile? Is this a program that has any chance of working in South Africa?
Well, so there are many different types of regulation. I think it's acknowledged quite extensively or quite widely now that criminalization has not worked and has not produced the results. In fact, as your listener mentioned, you know, it's made things worse in the sense that it's because of the illicit market that drugs have such a high price and therefore are so attractive in terms of young people dealing in. In terms of Portugal, for instance, decriminalization not only decreased the number of drug arrests, but it also decreased the number of people that did drugs overall in the long term. So, you know, simply taking our foot off the gas in terms of criminalization does not necessarily mean people are suddenly going to do a lot more drugs. That being said, what is often forgotten is that decriminalization in Portugal and other places has occurred in tandem with a vast increase in the number or the effort of social development and social support and education and healthcare and a whole raft of other services. So simply decriminalizing won't be effective unless it's done in a context where a whole lot of other things are put in place. In South Africa, you know, there's a wide spectrum of choices that can be made from brute criminalization to absolute legalization. And I think, you know, some sort of regulation, depending on drug and depending on context, would be far more effective. Again, that being said, without the social development, without social support services put in place at the same time, however, it could be problematic. And I think, you know, ultimately, government departments are going to have to find a way of working with each other rather than against each other to do that.
Today, a year ago, the Constitutional Court ruled regarding the decriminalization of marijuana for personal use. Since then, if you look at the crime statistics, drug-related crime has fallen by a factor of something like 100,000 fewer drug-related crimes reported. The Minister of Police noting this has got to do with that that Constitutional Court ruling regarding private marijuana use. Does that show any correlation that police and police stations were using the arrest and the prosecution of marijuana-related offences as a somewhat of a crutch to supplement and to boost their own crime statistics at the station level?
Well, I think, you know, the problem with the crime stats and with drug policing in this country is that success is defined as numerical and as the increase or the number of arrests. And so, you know, in the performance management system, officers and stations are required to increase generally the number of arrests of whatever they've done. But, you know, in terms of drugs, increasing the number of arrests is not necessarily a success. In fact, it is indicative of more people doing more drugs. So in actual fact, you know, defining what constitutes success needs to change in policing as a whole. There has been, you know, with the decriminalization of cannabis, there has been, therefore, a decrease in the number of arrests. And I think that is ultimately a success. Whether it's indicative of the police not arresting as many people or taking their foot off the gas or focusing elsewhere is sort of, you know, up for debate. But I think we haven't seen suddenly a mass increase in psychosis cases or something like that as a result of decriminalization. So it's at least a hint that, you know, just because we're not arresting everyone we can find of drugs doesn't necessarily mean that suddenly everyone's going to start doing drugs.
Very interesting indeed. Dr. Simon Howell, there, research fellow at UCT's Global Risk Governance Program.